I'm John Batzler. This is the John Batzler Show. Hotel Mars, Episode N. Dr. David Livingston of the Space Show joins me, and we're very pleased to welcome Chaim Ben Arroyo, our colleague, who's a professor at Rutgers. In addition to, most importantly, he's the author of The Prescient, Turning Dust to Gold, Building a Future on the Moon and Mars. Why? Because Donald J. Trump, the president-elect of the United States, has tapped Peter Thiel, the visionary, once upon a time a colleague of Elon Musk's, and bringing in new people to the Trump transition team for NASA to lean towards, to look towards commercial space, and to combine all this with a mission to the moon, we believe. So I want to start there, because Chaim writes the book about a mission to the moon. These many years, it seemed several lifetimes too far to get back there. The most the Obama administration would mention was an asteroid return mission. Chaim, Professor, a very good evening to you. These remarks by the Wall Street Journal report of Peter Thiel meeting and adding to the Trump transition space team. They've added Alan Stern, for example, the man, the genius behind New Horizons. They've also pointed to lunar landings. They've pointed to lunar colonies. How do you measure this, Chaim, after waiting so many years, after having written the book about this? Do you believe it this time? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening. Great to be on the show. Hope springs eternal. I would say that the people that he has involved in his transition team, as well as comments made by Pence and also Representative Babin from the Johnson Space Center district that he represents, they believe in going to the moon first as a step to Mars. And they also are pushing for a greater focus on human space exploration. The twist here is that they also support an increased use of public-private partnerships, perhaps capitalizing on some of the technologies coming out of SpaceX and Blue Origin and Bigelow.
And do you measure that to be an important and new development, or is this talk you've heard before, Professor?
Some of it has been talked about before, but it seems that the approach of Trump in his transition, not only about space, but a lot of the other departments that he's filling, is really to approach this from a point of view of a more efficient system, one that is not based solely on taxpayers. And space is so expensive and has to really take place over so many generations that the only thing that really I believe will work is this public-private partnership. We can't have, NASA will not be able to do all of this. We really need to start having companies pick up some of the technologies and develop it, and learning from what NASA has developed over the past several decades.
David?
Chaim, good to talk to you again. One of the things I find remarkable is that Trump, as a businessman, is getting options presented to him by those that want to make money in space, and many who are doing it, like Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, who is a big investor in SpaceX, and some others. So Trump, the businessman, is being presented with a concept for space policy that can make money. Do you think that's a strong carrot for Trump to give strong consideration to go into that direction?
I think that his expertise lies along those lines of thinking. And we all know that space has always been something that has been done by the U.S. and other countries for reasons other than science and exploration. It's always been done either as competition against the former Soviet Union, or it's been done in order to do something that has some application to Earth technologies, whether it's the weather in the past in the past administration, or for secondary reasons. And so the science will always piggyback on all these other activities. And because it's so expensive, there has to be a way to finance this. Government so far has been the one who's financed manned space exploration. We're now seeing companies develop some technologies. They haven't been manned yet, but I believe that some of the technologies from NASA, in collaboration with companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, can allow them to go to the next step, which is an order of magnitude more difficult, putting people into space. But I think that it has to be paid for, and I think people like us here who are space enthusiasts will have to agree that there is a bottom line that has to be matched somehow.
Professor, before we go to the details, and they're elaborate in your book about what a moon colony would look like, do you accept the case that a moon colony is a step to Mars? Why I ask is Elon Musk has spoken of putting a Dragon unmanned capsule on the surface of Mars in 2018 and making the leap to a Mars colony bypassing the moon. Is the moon an important component? Is this a PR move? Do we need the moon to get to Mars?
In my view, we do. I think it's 100% that we need to go to the moon first before we go to Mars. The moon is 3 days away. Mars is 1 year away. We really don't know how to build rockets that are going to be reliable for a year without any sort of support. We don't know how to keep people alive and sane for a year-long mission to Mars, one-way mission, and then another year on Mars and another year back. So I'm not sure what the Mars First crowd really is thinking. If we talk to people who know about human physiology, machine reliability, all these issues, they will say we need to go to the moon to develop our technologies, develop our ability to survive in space and actually build in space and on the moon.
David?
Chaim, do we have the ability, the technology, to get to the moon within the first term of Trump, if all goes well and we don't hit any hitches? I know that's kind of risky. Could we do this in 4 years?
I'd say 4 years is probably a minimum. I would say that definitely, say, 4 to 6 years, maybe 8 years. I think four is rather short because a lot of our capabilities for getting to the moon really haven't been tested. A lot of the technology from the Saturn era no longer exists, and I think that 4 years is a little bit on the close side, assuming that the current NASA budget is what we're talking about.
The team, the expanded team for the NASA transition team at the Trump headquarters, includes Jack Burns, a professor of University of Colorado who has advocated lunar exploration, director of the Lunar University Network for Astrophysics, LUNAR, and a network of universities that support lunar exploration. What does this look like, Chaim? Does this look like they want to put a rover down there and they want to land men to man the rover or let the rover team span out? Or are they going to go down there? For example, I learned that there are very big lava tubes on the surface of the moon. Those would make wonderful studies in building a human habitat underground. It solves a lot of problems, just the way it does on Mars. So what do you know about their plan? What have they indicated heretofore? Because this is all new at the Trump transition. If we go to the moon, is it more wandering around like in Gale Crater on Mars? Or is it to plant the flag and stay there for X number of weeks or X number of months?
I believe that this is going to be a different kind of mission than the Apollo. I believe that they will send robots first to scout potential landing sites. They will need to do testing of the regolith to figure out the composition. They'd like to be able to use the regolith to make fuel, to use it for building materials. In my view, this is something that is open-ended. So we're basically starting on a long journey that is open-ended and meant to eventually have people there permanently, maybe in the 30 to 50-year time frame. But I would say in the next, going on David's timeline, four years to get there. After we do get there, I would say about 10 years to set up relatively permanent facilities for a handful of people that will be the kernel of a future colony on the moon.
So that's 2030. That's a number you're happy with?
I think 2030 is reasonable to have a semi-permanent or permanent facility on the moon for a small number of people.
David?
Chaim, if it's 2030 to the moon and we're using the moon to get to Mars, then what's the timeline, in your opinion, to get to Mars?
I would say from 10 years from 2030, so let's say 2040. Because I'd say that 2030 means that we have a fledgling colony on the moon. They're learning how to do stuff. They're learning about human physiology. They're learning how to build structures there. And as John mentioned, perhaps explore for lava tubes and learn how to build underground, which is the long-term future. And then use the moon as a liftoff point for Mars, much smaller costs because of the lower gravity. And I think 10 years is a reasonable number to get us to the point where we're confident that we can send people to Mars. You know, we know that only 50% of the spacecraft that we sent to Mars landed on Mars. The rest crashed or just flew by Mars. And so if we're going to send people to Mars, a 50% reliability is a little bit low in my view.
I'm Ben Arroyo, the author of Turning Dust to Gold, Building a Future on the Moon and Mars. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. We're going to turn to competition next. When we come back, the Russians are talking the moon, so China's talking the moon. What? I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Professor Chaim Ben-Aroy of Rutgers University, the author of Turning Dust to Gold, Building a Future on the Moon and Mars. It's a book right now. It's been out for several years, and it's copiously illustrated with drawings and speculation and a vocabulary of what a moon colony and then eventually a Mars colony will look like. This looked all to be out of reach of the political establishment in the United States until the Trump transition starts to listen to some of the visionaries who are commercial space, that is, SpaceX or Orbital ATK or Blue Origin, that's Jeff Bezos' firm. And now we have a moment to believe that the moon is back in the story. The Russians are not silent, and the Chinese are not silent. Let's move to the Russians. Professor David Livingston is here as well to comment on the Russians, but I want to go especially to the Russian combination of Russia's plan to build a cislunar orbiter like the ISS on a small scale and join with Boeing aircraft, Boeing Aerospace, to build that. Now, that is a big visionary operation. I'll ask a practical question. At this point, to your knowledge, do we have lift to put an ISS in lunar orbit?
We don't. I would say it might take almost as long to achieve that program that you described as it would to place a number of people back on the moon.
That's a disappointment to me. They're talking about the SLS. Is that a fairy tale, Chaim?
I think it's not ruled out. I think what we have to see is whether the Trump administration goes full steam into the working with the other companies to try to team up to create the lift. The SLS may have a life, and I think that we have to see what the final vision is of the Trump administration. I don't think that they are as wedded to our space station. They would like to transition it into something where it becomes a quasi-public facility supported by non-taxpayers. And so I think that the Russians have the largest space lift capability, I believe. Is that right, David? So I think they can
do
a lot of space.
Yeah, they have the new rockets that they're building, but the heaviest version has not been completed. But, Chaim, what about Falcon Heavy by SpaceX? Could that, with multiple flights, get us to a lunar orbiting space station?
It could. I think that even the Russians are talking about 2024 to get their first crewed flight for that new ship into low Earth orbit, and then mission to lunar orbit 2027. So even they're talking 10 years to go to lunar orbit. And I think the issue with the Falcon Heavy and the SpaceX rockets and the Blue Origin rockets is that they're not man-rated. And so I think that's a challenge that is really an order of magnitude more difficult than just sending up equipment and supplies.
The Chinese have an independent of everybody else's program because their program is essentially military. And they've talked about a moon landing, a moon base. Is that so much noise, Chaim? Do they have the capability that we lack?
I think they're catching up to us. I think we're still ahead of the Chinese in many respects. They do have the capability of putting people in space like the Russians and like we do. I think that they need to first go through the process that we went through with Apollo, which is basically send craft to orbit the moon with people at some point, go through the docking procedures. they would have to go through the same kind of systems that we did with Apollo, multi-stage docking around the moon. So I think there's nothing that prevents them from doing it. I think that they might have a more streamlined process than we do because of the kind of system that they have, the political system. They can decide to do it and pour tremendous amounts of funds into it. So they could probably do it in the amount of time that we took originally, less than 10 years.
David?
The key, I think, here is to maintain the enthusiasm and the forward motion for going to the moon. So, you know, the Trump landing team, so to speak, is represented by the legacy and traditional aerospace that butts head with the new space and the people that have been talking the way you talk and I talk and John talk. How do you see that working out with Trump? He's getting positions and perspectives from both sides. How do we stand with our side? Do you think it makes the case for going to the moon? Will it prevail?
In my view, it will. If we look at what the vice president-elect has said and what some of the people on his team have said and the Representative Babin has said, there are two main reasons that they put forward to go back to the moon. One is investing in space delivers major returns to Earth, inventions, innovations, economic growth, people going and getting PhDs in engineering. And the second reason that they mention is just the national defense. We worry about the Chinese and Russian programs to move into space, and not only for civilian purposes, but also for military purposes. We're worried about satellite killer technology. We're worrying about defending our eyes in the sky. So there's always going to be a military component to this, and we see that that's going to be part of the equation that the Trump team and Trump himself will have to weigh in the balance.
What will help is if we can find a way to make money out of this. Now, we've talked about asteroid mining. I note in the news is that the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, called JAXA, signed a new agreement with iSpace.inc., which is described as a robot exploration company in first steps for developing a mining industry on the moon. They're also behind Team Hakuto, which has entered into the Google Lunar X Prize. That's $20 million to put a privately developed micro rover on the moon within the next year. Mining on the moon. Do we know what's there, Chaim? Do we know how we could monetize it if we get there?
We have a good idea of what the composition is. We know that there are elements there that could be used to build a civilization there. We know that there's silicon, there's magnesium, oxygen, hydrogen, other trace elements, including things like the titanium. So there is that kind of materials there. The question is whether mining it and bringing it to Earth can be justified economically. People have suggested helium-3, which is on the moon, to power a nuclear fusion reactors, which don't exist yet, so that's really not really on the table yet. It seems to me that the materials there do not warrant going to the moon and bringing materials back to Earth. Another thing the Japanese have suggested is to create huge solar panels and plant them on the lunar surface to get sunlight and then beam it to the Earth. So solar energy generated on the moon, beamed back to the Earth, is one thing that they've talked about, and they have actual concepts for that. But bringing back materials, unless we have fusion reactors on Earth, which have been perpetually several decades out, doesn't seem to be the way to go.
All right, we have less than a minute, David. Your estimation, David, because you talk to a wide range of people in space enthusiasts, is the moon part of the conversation, David, or is this going to be new in these next years with the Trump team?
I think it is very much part of the conversation. It has a new life mm-hmm. with the new Trump administration and some of the new members of the landing team, like Charles Miller, for example, and a couple of the other people. And there is real excitement and understanding that the moon is finally going to be appreciated, and we will get back there for commercial purposes as well as with commercial companies, not just government programs.
We thank Chaim Ben-Arroya, professor at Rutgers University. He's the author of Turning Dust to Gold, Building a Future on the Moon and Mars. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. I'm John Batchelor, Hotel Mars, Episode 8.